Hello, everyone, and welcome back to this edition of Neonatal Review, Isolette to Crib. Again, the purpose of this podcast is to review high-yield common topics in neonatology. While our focus is geared towards the perinatal neonatal boards, anyone learning or studying neonatology will find this podcast helpful. I will be one of your hosts for this podcast. I'm Dr. Julie Weiner, one of the neonatologists and medical director of the NICU at Children's Mercy Hospital in Kansas City, Missouri. Welcome, and thank you for joining us again. To help prepare for boards, remember we have a collection of neonatologists to join us and help us along the way. All have either passed boards, been there, done that, or are currently studying for boards, same boat as you. Today, we are going to be joined again by Dr. Jyoti Sharma, the other host for this podcast. She is the Fellowship Program Director here at Children's Mercy Hospital. Hi, Dr. Sharma, and thank you for joining us again.
Hi there, everyone.
She is going to talk about early onset sepsis and mainly the epidemiology and pathogenesis for today's podcast. Thank you, Dr. Sharma, for joining us. Please tell us what we need to know about early onset sepsis.
Thank you, Dr. Weiner. Yes, sepsis is a very broad topic, and it's one of the common illnesses that we encounter in our neonatal practice. But before we get to talk about early onset neonatal sepsis, I just want to discuss some aspects of neonatal sepsis in general. So as you all are aware, neonatal sepsis is a systemic infection with isolation of bacterial pathogen, usually a positive blood culture from the bloodstream in infants who are less than or equal to 28 days of life. As I mentioned earlier, it's an important cause of morbidity and mortality in newborns, particularly in infants of very low birth weight.
Dr. Sharma, what is the incidence of neonatal sepsis?
Dr. Weiner, the overall incidence of neonatal sepsis ranges from about 1 to 5 cases per 1,000 live births in the U.S.
Can you shed some light on worldwide neonatal infection and epidemiology?
Yes, I would like to talk a little bit about the worldwide trends in neonatal infection. What is important to remember is that most global infections are from countries with limited both maternal and child health care, which accounts for about 98% of all neonatal deaths due to infections globally. Globally, neonatal sepsis accounts for about 1/3 of all neonatal deaths. The other 1/3 is attributable to prematurity, and then 20% is due to birth asphyxia and 10% due to congenital anomalies.
So neonatal sepsis is generally classified into early onset sepsis and late onset sepsis. Can you highlight the differences and the definitions for these two forms?
So in general, early onset sepsis is defined by a positive blood or CSF culture with proven infection occurring in newborns less than or equal to 7 days of age. That is the general definition. We also have another definition, which is generally considered for hospitalized premature infants, especially the extremely low birth weight infants. And in this group of patients, more and more, we are defining early onset sepsis as culture-proven infection occurring at less than or equal to 72 hours of age.
Why does the definition vary for very low birth weight babies related to early onset sepsis? And why is that only in the first 3 days of life?
So Dr. Weiner, there are two reasons why this definition is used for the extremely low birth weight infants. One, the risk of infection in extremely low birth weight infants after 72 hours of life is primarily due to the specifics of ongoing NICU care rather than from perinatal risk factors. And the organisms that cause these infections after 72 hours of life in the very low birth weight infants reflect the nosocomial flora of the NICU rather than from perinatally acquired maternal flora.
Thank you, Dr. Sharma, for clarifying that. So for the purpose of this podcast, remember, we are going to focus on early onset sepsis and the things that you need to know. Dr. Sharma, do you mind discussing the importance of the epidemiology of early onset sepsis, such as incidence and mortality and morbidity?
Sure, Dr. Weiner. Some of this information actually may appear on the board exam. So the overall incidence of culture-proven early-onset sepsis in the U.S. is approximately 0.7 to 1 per 1,000 live births. What is interesting is that the incidence is strongly influenced by the gestational age at birth. Infants who are more than or equal to 37 weeks gestation, their incidence is only about 0.5 per 1,000 live births.
Can you comment on the incidence of EOS in preterm infants?
So in contrast, among the preterm infants, those that are less than 37 weeks gestation at birth, the incidence of early onset sepsis is 7 times higher at about 3.7 per 1,000 live births. In very low birth weight infants, the incidence and the mortality both is higher, which is expected. Such as for infants who are less than 1,000 grams, the incidence is about 26 per 1,000 live births. In those who are between 1,000 to 1,500 grams, the incidence is about 8 per 1,000 live births. I just want to talk a little bit about the case fatality, which is the proportion of persons with a particular condition who die from that condition. So basically, those patients that died from the early onset sepsis. The case fatality for early onset sepsis ranges from 11 to 16%. More than 90% of these deaths occur among the preterm population. The mortality from early onset sepsis has decreased significantly in term infants with improvements in NICU care over the last 30 years, but also due to intrapartum antibiotic prophylaxis for GBS, which we will discuss in a later podcast. And as I mentioned earlier, mortality rates from early onset sepsis are higher in preterm infants. You can see again, preterm infants are more likely to get early onset sepsis, which is consistent with sepsis rates increasing with decreasing gestational age.
So let's move on and talk about risk factors. What puts a newborn baby at a higher risk for early onset sepsis?
So for early onset neonatal sepsis, the main risk factors are perinatal factors. And of course, the biggest one is the maternal risk factors. One of the important maternal risk factors is chorioamnionitis, or more commonly known now as intrauterine infection. The sepsis risk for infants delivered to mothers with evidence of chorioamnionitis is about 1 to 4%.
So I know we will discuss chorioamnionitis in detail in a future podcast, but can you briefly discuss some of the risk factors for chorioamnionitis?
So maternal factors that are associated with development of chorioamnionitis include longer length of labor, prolonged rupture of membrane, multiple digital vaginal examinations, placement of internal fetal or uterine monitoring devices, spontaneous onset of labor, and meconium state amniotic fluid.
So for early onset sepsis, are there other maternal risk factors that we should be aware of?
Yes, there are. So these include, one, the intrapartum maternal temperature, so maternal fever with a temperature above 38 degrees Celsius or 100.4 degrees Fahrenheit. Second one is the delivery less than 37 weeks gestation, which is consistent with prematurity. And the third one is maternal group B strep colonization.
I just want to comment here that GBS is a very important cause of early onset sepsis. But we will discuss in more detail in a later podcast about specifically GBS.
So the other maternal risk factor that increases the risk of early onset sepsis is rupture of membranes greater than or equal to 18 hours. This, of course, increases the risk of ascending infection.
Does the immune system of the infant's mom have any effect on early onset sepsis?
Yes, so adequacy of the maternal immune response help prevent early onset sepsis. So studies of maternal serum IgG antibodies against specific capsular polysaccharides of GBS strains have been shown to be protective against infection with the relevant GBS strain in their infants. So this is just interesting.
So we know babies are at risk for listeria as one of the causes of early onset sepsis, and this is related to maternal dietary habits. Will you just elaborate a little bit how listeria is tied to maternal eating habits?
Yeah, so while we do not see many cases of listeria monocytogenes, it is a cause of early onset sepsis in newborns. So dietary intake of contaminated foods, this could be refrigerated foods such as deli meat, soft cheeses, increase the risk of listeria infection. And this consumption can be both before and during labor. The unique thing about early onset listeria infection is that the infection occurs through transplacental. Lastly, another risk factor that I just want to mention is that which I think as antenatal and perinatal care advances, procedures during pregnancy also increase the risk of early onset sepsis. So maternal procedures such as cervical cerclage, amniocentesis, which disrupt the amniotic cavity, increase the risk of intra-amniotic infection and subsequently neonatal sepsis.
Thank you, Dr. Sharma, for discussing maternal risk factors. Now let's move on and talk about infant-specific risk factors that increase the risk of early onset sepsis.
So there are infant risk factors, which one is, as we know, colonization of the infant can occur during the process of delivery, and this can lead to invasive infection soon after. The other is that the skin and mucous membrane are barriers to introduction of microorganisms, and especially in premature infants, these barriers increasing the risk of infection in these babies. And the other factor is, of course, with premature babies, we end up doing several invasive procedures such as IV access and intubation, again, breaking the skin and the mucous membrane barriers. Lastly, immaturity of the premature immune system, such as low IgG levels related to decreased transplacental transfer of maternal IgG, also increases the risk of sepsis in preterm infants.
So bacterial infections are one of the biggest causes of early onset sepsis in neonates. Can you tell us a little bit about which bacteria are most responsible for these types of infection?
I'm going to talk about the microorganisms that actually cause early onset sepsis. And the two big ones are group B streptococcus infection and gram-negative infections, of which the main one is E. coli. So a little bit about GBS. It remains the most common cause of early onset sepsis amongst the term infants, and it accounts for about 40% of early onset sepsis cases. But as you are aware, with the introduction of intrapartum antibiotic prophylaxis to prevent early onset disease, the incidence has actually decreased by 87%. So in the 1990s, early onset GBS infection was about 1.8 cases per 1,000 live births, but it decreased to 0.24 cases per 1,000 live births in 2013. So a pretty significant decrease in early onset GBS infection. The second most common cause of early onset neonatal sepsis is E. coli, and this is the leading cause of early onset sepsis in preterm infants, accounting for more than 38% of early onset cases in preterm infants. As I mentioned, these GBS and E. coli remain the most common cause of early onset sepsis in both term and preterm infants, accounting for about 70% of cases. The other bacteria that cause early onset sepsis are Enterococcus, Staph aureus, Coccolis negative staph, other gram-negative bacteria, and Listeria, as we talked earlier.
So as you mentioned earlier, we will talk a little bit more in depth about GBS infections in a separate podcast. But do you mind just discussing E. coli and how it relates to early onset sepsis?
So E. coli, as I mentioned earlier, is the second most common cause of early onset sepsis in newborns. It accounts for about 24% of all early onset sepsis episodes, of which 81% of cases occur in preterm infants. The specific group that has a higher rates of E. coli sepsis is the extremely low birth weight infants. In these patients, it's the single most common cause of early onset sepsis, accounting for a third of the episodes in a large multicenter study. A little bit about E. coli. As we know, E. coli is a gram-negative rod that is found in human intestinal tract and in human vagina and urinary tract. There are hundreds of different antigenic types of E. coli, but the one that is most responsible for early onset sepsis, both bacteremia and especially meningitis, is the K1 type polysaccharide capsule.
Because E. coli represents such a high number of early onset sepsis, it's why when we're choosing antibiotics, we're also choosing a second agent that will cover gram-negative infection. So some units still use gentamicin, while others do use a third-generation cephalosporin because E. coli is such a high percent. So Dr. Sharma, can you comment a little bit on early onset sepsis incidence and GBS prophylaxis?
Yeah, Dr. Weiner, yes, thanks for commenting on the antibiotic use, and we will discuss more about this issue in our next podcast. So with regards to the early onset sepsis incidence and GBS prophylaxis, the incidence of early onset sepsis has fallen, as I mentioned earlier, with the widespread use of the intrapartum antibiotic prophylaxis. With the implementation of this prophylaxis against GBS, concern has been raised regarding increasing incidence of E. coli-specific early onset sepsis and particularly ampicillin-resistant early onset sepsis. But again, these studies are mostly a single-center case-control studies, so the jury is still out there on this issue. I think what is important to realize is that in clinical situations where a critically ill infant has a high likelihood of early-onset sepsis, empiric antibiotic coverage for ampicillin-resistant gram-negative organisms should be considered until the blood culture results are known.
Thank you, Dr. Sharma. Okay, so I always feel like listeria is a board's favorite topic. And I know we will, again, go in more specific on different microorganisms in other podcasts, but will you just comment a little bit more on listeria?
Yes, Dr. Weiner, that's true. So in clinical practice, we don't often see listeria infections, but yes, it's a favorite board question. So a little bit on that. Listeria monocytogens are gram-positive bacillus bacteria that most commonly infect humans via the ingestion of contaminated food such as meat, poultry, dairy products. They survive cold temperature storage, and this is an important biological advantage. And as we mentioned, soft cheeses and deli meats, which are in the refrigerator, can readily be contaminated with listeria. It's an intracellular pathogen that targets primarily the monocyte macrophage cellular lineage. It's an intracellular pathogen that primarily targets the monocytes and macrophages. It only accounts for about 5% of early onset sepsis in preterm infants, and the overall incidence in the U.S. is about 2 to 13 per 100,000 live births. So it can actually cause severe illness, not only in the pregnant mother, but in the fetus and in the newborns. And that is why it is actually difficult to ascertain the true incidence of listeriosis in pregnancy, because many cases that are undiagnosed may result in spontaneous abortions of the pre-viable fetus. And as I mentioned earlier, it's usually transmitted to the fetus transplacentally.
So just a few buzzwords when it comes to listeria. So it's a gram-positive bacillus, it's an intracellular pathogen, and that it's transmitted through the bloodstream transplacentally. So Dr. Sharma, how about other organisms causing EOS?
So a little bit about the other organisms, and these are mainly gram-negative organisms, and most often they actually cause infection in the preterm infants, mainly the extremely low birth weight infants. As I mentioned, gram-negative organisms include Enterobacter, the Klebsiella species, and Escherichia. It's also important to realize that these are more likely to be causes of late-onset sepsis than early-onset sepsis. I do want to comment about the Citrobacter species, which account for about 5% of bacterial sepsis in extremely low birth weight infants. This is important, and this could be a board question because of its association with meningitis and brain abscess and subsequently resulting in significant neurological sequelae. So Citrobacter species and Coronobacter saccus is important to remember. The other group is the anaerobic bacteria, specifically Bacteroides fragilis. It can be a cause of neonatal early onset sepsis.
So now that we talked about bacterial organisms, are there others such as fungal that are important causes of EOS that we should be aware of?
Dr. Weiner, so fungal primary candida species, it's rare for them to cause early onset neonatal sepsis. As we'll discuss later on, they can result in late onset sepsis. So the incidence of candida species causing early onset sepsis in the NICU has been reported to be about around 1 to 4%. Fungal early onset neonatal sepsis in preterm infants and extremely low birth weight infants is often assured with very prolonged antibiotic exposure, more than 24 hours of pregnant mothers before delivery. So if mothers who've had maybe prolonged labor with also prolonged rupture of membranes and have had antibiotics for more than 24 hours do increase the risk of their preterm infants developing early onset fungal infection.
So stepping back just for a moment, two bacteria that are common for EOS are Staph aureus and coag negative staph, especially for the preterm infant. Will you just cover those for a few minutes?
Yes. So Staph aureus and coagulase negative staph are causes of infection in the neonates, but they are actually very rare causes of early onset neonatal infection. They are more common as late onset infection with nosocomial infection in the NICU. So interestingly, just wanted to comment on a study where they actually, in the rectovaginal swabs that they took for the GBS in pregnant mothers, they looked at, I think, 5,000 pregnant women. Their incidence of MRSA was 3.5% in this rectovaginal screening cultures. But interestingly, there were no cases of MRSA neonatal early onset sepsis in the delivered infants. So as you can see, it's a very rare cause. However, there have been some reports of early onset sepsis due to Staph aureus. I think a case series describing 7 cases in premature infants with congenital Staph aureus infection. And in these patients, it was not only that the infant's blood cultures were positive, but their amniotic fluid cultures were also positive. And 3 out of these 7 cases had invasive procedures antenatally, such as amniocentesis or amnioinfusion. So again, instrumental use in perinatal period resulted in Staph aureus infection in premature infants as early onset sepsis, but otherwise it's rare.
Okay, as we get close to wrapping up this podcast, Dr. Sharma, can you provide kind of a summary of early onset sepsis epidemiology and the pathogenesis for our listeners?
Thank you, Dr. Weiner. So in summary, early onset sepsis is defined by a positive blood culture or CSF culture of proven infection occurring in infants less than or equal to 7 days of life. For hospitalized premature infants, specifically the extremely low birth weight infants, it is defined as culture-proven infection occurring less than or equal to 72 hours of life. The overall incidence of culture-proven early onset sepsis in the newborn is about 7 to 1 per 1,000 live births. The incidence is strongly influenced by gestational age at birth. The lower the gestational age, the higher the risk of early onset sepsis. Maternal risk factors for early onset sepsis are chorioamnionitis, fever, temperature greater than 38 degrees Celsius, delivery less than 37 weeks gestation, maternal GBS colonization, rupture of membranes more than 18 hours, dietary intake of contaminated foods, and procedures during pregnancy, and the adequacy of maternal immune response. The infant risk factors include colonization of the infant during the delivery process, disruption of the barrier function of the skin and mucous membrane, especially in premature infants, and immaturity of the premature neonatal immune system.
Okay, Dr. Sharma, let's wrap up with 2 questions for our listeners.
So this question deals with just general early onset neonatal sepsis. So you have an infant who is born at 25 weeks gestation after spontaneous preterm labor. A blood culture is obtained in the NICU soon after admission. It yields E. coli. Which of the following is an incorrect statement regarding early onset sepsis? A, E. coli is the most common organism causing early onset sepsis in the extremely low birth weight infants. B, Listeria early onset sepsis occurs via the hematogenous spread of the organism across the placenta. C, the incidence of early onset sepsis has increased with a widespread implementation of intrapartum antibiotic for prevention of GBS disease. And D, since the introduction of intrapartum antibiotic prophylaxis, there has been more than 50% reduction of early onset. And E, Citrobacter species, especially in very low birth weight infants, can be a cause of brain abscess. So which of this is incorrect?
Okay, Dr. Sharma, I'm going to take a stab at it. As I read through them, which statement is incorrect? It's C, the incorrect statement. The incidence of early onset sepsis has increased with widespread use of intrapartum antibiotics for the prevention of GBS disease. That was what the fear was when that was implemented in the 90s. However, we have not seen any increase of early onset sepsis related to intrapartum antibiotics.
You are correct. C is the answer.
Okay, let's move on to the next question.
So the next question is, the spectrum of microorganisms causing early onset sepsis in the era of intrapartum antibiotic prophylaxis is different between term neonates and very low birth weight neonates. Of the following, the most common microorganism attributed to early onset sepsis in term neonates is A, group B streptococcus, B, E. coli, C, Coglis negative staph, D, Bacteroides fragilis, E, MRSA.
If I remember correctly, it's A, group B strep. Although group B strep and E. coli make up 70% of early onset sepsis, GBS still is the number one reason.
Yes, Dr. Weiner, you are correct. Although we've decreased the early onset sepsis due to GBS, it is still the most common cause in term neonates.
Hopefully this information will give you a better understanding of the epidemiology and pathogenesis of early onset sepsis. Thank you for joining us. This is Neonatology Review, Isolette to Crib. I'm Dr. Julie Weiner. Thanks for listening and join us next time where we will talk about the management and treatment of early onset sepsis with Dr. Sharma.